Okay, we'll call to order the House Revenue Committee and welcome our Senate counterparts here this morning as well to receive the May forecast. In a few minutes, we'll wish it was the March forecast. I've been asked to announce that there are some seats still over on this side of the room. If you are standing, please take a seat. If you cannot find a seat, and if you're still standing, Capitol Security will escort you to hearing room B, which is the overflow room for this hearing. But for those of you who are by the door or on this side of the room, there are still seats over by the screen. All right, with that, we're here for one purpose this morning, and that is to receive the forecast for the remainder of this biennium and for the next biennium, and we will welcome Tom Pitowski. And Michael Kennedy, good to see you back with us this morning.
Good morning, Chairman.
Who's leading off? Mr. Pitowski, is that you?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, members of both the Senate and House Revenue Committees. For the record, my name is Tom Pitowski, State Economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. With me today also is Michael Kennedy, Revenue Economist, also with the Office of Economic Analysis. And today is our formal release to you of our May 2003 Economic and Revenue Forecast. So let me just jump right into the presentation. Just as a reminder, Oregon Economic Forecast, the process we go through each quarter, we have a pre-meeting with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors to discuss national trends because they influence our model and the Oregon model. We do our simulations. Then we have another meeting with a group that is made up of what we call insiders. These are members of government agencies that use our information, that we gain information from. And then the outsiders group is our Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. With that, we finalize our economic model numbers, and then we meet with a brand new committee, the Revenue Forecast Advisors. We met with them on August 8th to discuss the forecast. This is made up of some members from the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, representatives from Legislative Revenue Office, from Department of Revenue, and various accountants that are also in the community that deal with firms, individuals, and so on to help us, assist us with the revenue forecast. This will be an ongoing committee that will be meeting with us every quarter. With that, then, we finalize the revenue forecast, and we're presenting that information to you today. Just very quickly on U.S. business investment, talk a little bit about the U.S. economy because it influences us here in Oregon. I've shown this chart before. You can see out here we had eight quarters of a decline in investment following one of the largest buildups in U.S. history of investment to begin with. With this collapse, this is really what precipitated the recession in the U.S. and also in Oregon. And also, as we've reminded you before, Oregon has sort of a real vested interest in this business investment area because we sort of disproportionately, compared to other states, we make capital goods that other firms use. And so this business investment is important for our economy. It looked like it had bottomed out, but we also had the first quarter of 2003, we had another little dip to it. We think this is sort of a pre-build-up to the war with Iraq situation, where there was a lot of uncertainty, businesses were sitting on the sidelines. And so the question now is that now that the war is essentially over and we're in this transition phase, will that investment item start to roll back up or not? Consumer sentiment, you can also see back here, we've had a nice bump up because this is taken towards the end of the month. And it was essentially, you know, the war with Iraq, basically combat troops started March 19th. And then with the fall of Baghdad, basically around April 14th, the sort of ground troop combat phase was ended. And so this survey was taken just after that, and it did have a nice bounce back up. But as you can see, we're still at some fairly low levels of consumer sentiment, basically consumer confidence, relative, of course, to the high days of the mid-1990s and late 90s. federal funds rate. We've had quite a drop over time. The part that's different here, and this is a forecast that we don't make. This is made by a national forecasting service called Global Insights, located in Boston. They had a much higher bounce back in interest rates, even what we had with our March forecast. Now this outlook is much more subdued out into the future. And this is really a view, I think, that we're mostly in a very low inflationary environment out to the future, and those interest rates are not going to bounce back as high as they did before. So they'll be much more muted. And we'll return to that point when we get to actually the revenue forecast, because that has some implications for interest income. Is this recent news? Are we giving recovery signal or the double dip falling back into recession? Our gross domestic product overall measure in the U.S. was up only 1.6% in the first quarter of this year. It was up only 1.4%. Long range growth is more like 3.5% to 3.75%. So this is a very, very slow growth. Following what looked like a recovery occurring in mid-2002. You know, the third quarter GDP growth was 4%. It was very good, healthy growth. But we've had now back-to-back of rather weak growth in the economy. Leading indicators, all of them seem to have been going up since September of 2002, but they fell in February and March of this year. Once again, we won't know until next week. They released the leading indicators for April. Is this more an indication, an overhang of the buildup to the war, the uncertainty that businesses and consumers were having, thus brought these indicators down? But we've also had some other aspects where we've had some more unemployment claims occurring, and these tend to push these indicators down. So we've had, in a sense, in the U.S. economy, a little bit of a softening from what looked like a building recovery just recently. Residential construction's been doing well, but non-residential has been down. It's expected to stay down quite a bit. Vehicle sales in the U.S. have also slowed a little bit, even though the incentive programs have continued. ISM index, this has been a fairly good index, especially for the manufacturing sector. It's bounced around, but it's been below the 50 mark for March and for April. Below 50 is some indication that within the coming months, there might be a somewhat of a contraction in the manufacturing sector. Once again, a false signal or a real signal, we think a lot of this is clouded by the events leading up to the war with Iraq. Payrolls in the U.S., they've contracted 5 out of the last 6 months. This is more of this evidence of this jobless recovery that seems to be hanging on for now well over a year. The unemployment in the U.S. went up to 6% from 5.7%. Consumer confidence, as I said, we had that jump up in April, but still it's well below the levels we saw mid-2002 when we were seeing somewhat of a recovery occurring. I put in oil prices here because I want to show something that looked more positive that's occurring. And this is a good sign because this really does put money back in people's pockets rather than putting it in the gas tank. Now turning to Oregon's economy. Our exports... we've seen a nice bounce back in our export situation, but you want to keep in mind the one uncertainty. It seems like we just have these string of uncertainties hitting us lately. SARS now is an uncertainty for our trading partners. So far, it's definitely hit the tourism area, where definitely both on both sides, tourists from Asia coming here and tourists from here going there. So that tourism industry has slowed up a bit, but we've not really seen any impact yet on the trade part, which is good news. But that doesn't mean if these economies start to slow down, China, some of the other Asian countries that we trade with, if their economies slow down, that could slow down our exports to them. So we're going to have, this is a situation we're going to have to watch. It seems to be somewhat controlled in most countries, except for China still. So if the SARS situation is under control, we don't see many more outbreaks. We hope the situation will go the route that a lot of these kind of outbreaks have happened, where they sort of run their course and they get contained. But, as I said, we're going to have to watch it closely. But so far, no indication there's been an impact on trade between us.
He says SARS or LARS?
I'll fix that typo. showing the Oregon employment growth. We've shown this before, the large recession we had back in the 80s, the recession of 91. And, of course, this recession now is turning out to be deeper than the 91 recession. Right here, this is the third quarter of 2003. First quarter, and you can see that it went up positively, but we're really discounting that quite a bit. What essentially happened here is that in the fourth quarter of 2002, retailers really didn't hire the way they usually did for the holiday season. So without that hiring, the seasonal factor there showed that as a rather weak quarter. Now, there weren't very many people to really lay off once you came into the first quarter because you didn't do a lot of hiring in the fourth. So the seasonality would normally say that retail should be a lot lower, but the seasonal factor makes it look a lot higher. So, and that really dominated the whole employment picture for that first quarter. So we really think it's either just basically flat, zero growth still, from the end of 2002 into this first quarter. Unemployment rates around the region today, I think within 1 hour, the Employment Department of Oregon will be releasing these numbers for April. We've released it for the entire month for the unemployment rate, which jumped up from 7.6% to 8%. And the various regions of the state are experiencing some fairly high unemployment rates. The eastern counties and the central area generally experience a high unemployment rate during this time period. These are not seasonally adjusted for the counties, which is not unusual then to see these kind of unemployment rates. But once again, it is unusual to see the Portland metro area, the lower Willamette Valley area, having unemployment rates this high during a regular business cycle. Flat employment in Oregon. This is what this graph is doing is saying, when did a recovery start, and given from when the recovery start, how did employment change as that recovery was occurring? And I take three recessions, and supposedly the recessions ended and recovery started in November of 82, March of 91, and January of 02 for our latest recession. And if those are the start of recovery periods, you can see that back in the early 80s, over 16 months from that November 82 period, we were up 5% in employment over a 16-month period. March 91 was much more of a sort of a flat type recovery, but then we finally bounced up to about a little under 2% 16 months. This period, the green line, notice that we were looking like, well, it's looking somewhat like 91 situation. We dipped somewhat of recovery, but now just in the last 2 months, we're ending here in April, we've now dropped below where we were supposedly at the start of this recovery. So this is very much in that same vein. I still call it a jobless recovery in that our office is not projecting a recession again, but what we're projecting is a much slower recovery and milder recovery than what we were looking at in our March forecast.
Tom, you call that a jobless recovery. I'd say it looks more like a less jobs recovery.
Yes. Because, and even though if we take a look at, you're looking at still, this is an index of 100, you're still 99 point something or other, so you're only .02 negative, really, from the start. But so I, given the bouncing around that numbers can be, yeah.
Well, let me just
note a no job recovery, basically.
How confident are you on that January 02 date as the correct point to begin the measurement from?
Well, if you take a look at what was changing for employment, it appears that it was all positive through there. Even though these look like they're right on the line here, they all were positive and drifting up. And so that was our demarcation point, that we had switched from the negative job losses to something of either zero or something positive, until, of course, just most recently.
So Tom, what factors do we have that lead us to believe there is a recovery?
Quite a few, actually. One is we're in a very, very low interest rate environment. That is a good environment to be in. It's in a sense, we've got the water is set, and we just need the horse to go there and drink. And if we can lead the businesses and consumers there to drink that water, it's there for them. So the environment is set for growth, which is a good sign. We've got the federal fiscal packages are going to be on their way, and that's going to be another tax cut, which should be beneficial to help us out. We're seeing some firming up of chip sales. The semiconductor industry seems at least to be stabilizing. We're not hearing further cut in capital spending by these firms. So that, I think, is a good sign. The Semiconductor Association has forecast 21% growth in chip sales for 2001, 22% for 2002. Now, I think that's a good sign. This is the same group that forecasted above 20% growth for 2001. But still, I see some stabilizing occurring in that area, which is good news. And consumer spending at least has not deteriorated further. It's more of a stabilizing nature. And we've seen that consumer confidence start to jump back up. We got rid of some of the uncertainties. So I think there's things in place that are good news. It's just how long is this going to take? There still is a tremendous amount of overcapacity, especially in manufacturing, that'll have to be used up as demand starts to increase. So we're discounting the recession part. We're also discounting any sense of a strong recovery.
That's true.
Yes.
Tom, will you talk at some point in your presentation about the prospect of deflation that was on the news the other day?
Yes.
Okay.
This is our general forecast. As you can see, this is deeper than we had in the 91 situation. Oregon is the red line. We expect to grow faster than the U.S. once again, but this is out after we get past basically 2004. But we do expect this to be a recovery. And keep in mind, you have this recovery here in 91, very strong. We're looking at a much milder type recovery to occur. We're basically only reaching up to maybe a maximum of 2% growth in employment and then settling out to the high 1% area. A couple sectors, lumber and wood, we expect that to stabilizing out at a much lower employment level, of course, over time. And if anything, probably a flat to maybe a slight secular decline over time. We've had some bad news recently, of course. The Roseburg Forest Products got hit pretty badly. There's still problems with the Canadian imports coming in of soft lumber. The tariffs really did not help all that much, given that they turned out to be less than the quota system that was in place before the tariffs. So it is a very tough industry in this area. High tech, you can see this quite a drop that we've had here, but interestingly enough, we didn't drop as bad as the U.S. average dropped. We expect it to come back up, but not the type of growth that we saw in, of course, the mid-1990s. Couple points on this high-tech area. As I mentioned in reply to Senator Deckard's question about the stabilization that we're starting to see and the forecast for chip sales that are positive. But also we've had some, I think, hangover bad news because of the length of the downturn in the sector. We've had Sony and Springfield announce, closures, LSI Logic layoffs, Sumco in Salem. Microchip Technology is going to delay their production startup at the old Fujitsu plant in Gresham. So there's some lag here that's occurring, but this is also going to be helping, if you want to think about this as help. It helps on the capacity side to try to lower that excess capacity that's out there so that as demand returns, you don't have that kind of overhang. Construction employment, also, we expect it to do a little bit better. Residential still seems to be chugging along fairly decently. It most likely will slow down a little bit. Non-residential is in the toilet. The best help they have there is basically on public investments of public projects. Things like bridges, schools, and things like that will help the sector out a little bit. Per capita income, it's been down for quite a while, and it's, like I said here, it's been a long road since 1980. We had a little tick up here, Nothing to cheer about. That's probably more a consequence that our population growth was lower than the U.S. population growth in this last year. And that's why we had this go up a little bit. Not that our per capita income did any better.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Have there been any significant changes in the U.S. Per capita income recently? You show that line as a flat line as a comparison, but what about the actual?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, the actual has been pretty much we're following in step with the U.S. I'd say that we probably, of course, in here, it's always been rising, and the Oregon per capita income has also been rising over time. But the U.S. has done a little bit better, especially since 1997. The U.S. economy was going fairly strong there. Even California, remember, was doing fairly well in this period of time. We got hit by the Asian financial crisis, and so our per capita income slid a little bit in this time. And then the overall recession happened, and we did a little bit worse once again than the U.S. was. But per capita income definitely slowed in the U.S. in this last recession. Some risk factors to this forecast. Once again, it's a baseline forecast. What can happen, as you're very well aware of, it can be lower than this. Unfortunately, you're too well aware of that part of it. But it can actually be better than this, too, in the future. And keep in mind, especially as Michael will be presenting the revenue forecast, we're switching from your concentration on just like a small couple of months period to end this budget period to now moving to a whole 24-month period. And this is a little different perspective when we're looking at it forecasting-wise. Upside and downside risks. Upside, if things could be better than we're looking at for the baseline. Downside risk, it could be worse. Congress and the Federal Reserve, I think that here in this situation, it could actually be better than what we're thinking of because of the Bush tax stimulus package, which definitely is going to make it through Congress eventually. We're not quite sure what exactly it's going to look like. Minimum is going to be a $50 billion tax cut, most likely. You want to keep in mind, too, tied to this package may finally be a realization that states throughout the U.S. are a drag on the U.S. economy if they have to cut their spending or raise taxes. So there may be some relief attached to this federal package going to the states. Oregon should be in a fairly good position relative to the states if they make the comparison criteria on the economic situation in the states. It's still questionable how much that would be. And I think this is where the politics is going to be happening through Congress and the Oval Office as to what size that package would be and thus whether we're going to get a dividend cut or not included in this tax package. But, and with the Federal Reserve, we said before, having very, very low interest rates, I think we've got a good environment to at least prevent this kind of a slide occurring. Maybe this might be a good point to address Senator Corcoran's comment on deflation. As maybe some of you are aware, just this morning, the producer price index was released by the Labor Department. It was the largest drop in that index in history for 1 month. Deflation is for an economist, is a very fascinating area. This was not a topic when I was going through graduate school that anybody talked about. It was something that almost was unthinkable. How could possibly you could have deflation ever occur? Topics was always about inflation. So now you have a situation, and we've seen what's happened with Japan. It's a reverse of behavior of what you have towards inflation. In inflation, you need to go out and buy things, and you should buy them sooner than later because the price would simply be higher. Now you have a reverse occurrence, a behavior that says, well, heck, if I wait, the price will be lower. I'll probably get a better deal. I've been telling people for quite a long time now, and interest rates are prices too, a price on money. And I've been telling people, you better refinance now or it's going to be too late. Well, those that waited turned out to have the smart behavior. because things reversed and it came down once again. And as you saw that one chart with interest rates, because of a look of a very low inflation environment coming up, those are kept down. So what do businesses do? Do I get into large investments and then I find out that I'm tied to an interest rate and I'm paying it back, and then, boy, I'm paying back in more expensive dollars. So there's a discouragement for investment. So it's a very insidious type of behavior that can cause a sort of a psychology among consumers and businesses that's harmful for the economy. The one good thing we have going for us is that it's kind of like when you're playing golf, and if your ball is right in front of somebody else's, and you can take your ball away and you can see the line of the putt, you know, going in, and then you can put your ball back and you can do a pretty good stroke. Japan has had their ball right, or our ball's been right in front of theirs, and we've seen how they've been putting, and we know we don't want to do that. And so we have the Federal Reserve ready and making statements. What can we do in order to make sure that we don't get in this deflationary situation? And we've got the things in work to help try to prevent these kind of situations. The Federal Reserve says they're committed. They will go out and they will increase that money supply, increase that liquidity to try to get those prices not to keep going down. We're putting money back in people's pockets. As long as they don't have that psychology of wanting to wait and they spend those tax breaks, that will also help. We also have the U.S. dollar falling, which is good because that puts less pressure on U.S. firms to have to keep their prices down because of cheap imports coming in. Those cheap imports are tougher now for foreign firms to keep those prices low. So that alleviates some pressure on U.S. firms, and possibly then they might be able to raise some prices. It seems very strange to talk about a positive thing of raising prices.
Senator Corcoran.
But you've mentioned several times tax breaks, but you don't mention in the context of the president's package that those tax breaks go predominantly to very high-income folks, and they're not going to spend that money. They're going to sock it away. It's just a transfer of wealth. How does that help?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, to the extent, as you've stated, that income group does not spend that money, that's correct. In the short term, that would not be helpful to the economy. To the extent that they provide funds available for firms, in the particular environment we are in, that may be somewhat helpful to them, although when you're in an environment where interest rates are really, really low, it's not very costly to borrow for firms.
But, Mr. Chair, it would seem more reasonable that if you were to provide tax breaks, you'd provide it to working folks who, you know, will have to spend it because, you know, they don't have discretionary income. They don't have investment income. And they will circulate the money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I would agree with you. What we call marginal propensity to consume is generally higher as people receive money and what they spend for lower income groups than it is for higher income groups. That's true.
Okay. Go ahead.
Geopolitical risks. We have one bullet down that we're not worried about, the actual combat phase of the war with Iraq. Now we have some uncertainty about the transition phase. Also, tensions in the Middle East, North Korea situation. Still, there are some geopolitical situations out there that can cause businesses, consumers to want to hold off an activity. Energy prices. The one bright point, of course, is the oil prices coming down. That really gets translated into a lot of production processes that use oil and refined oil, gasoline, things like that. That's helpful for our economy. Downside is a more regional situation. Although we luckily have had one of the wettest Aprils on record, still the reservoirs aren't quite up to where they need to be. We still have Bonneville Power Administration worrying about their debt that they need to cover. And so we might still see some raising of rates in the Northwest for things like natural gas and for electricity.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
If I may, I'd like to take a step back to Senator Corcoran's remark, and you sort of answered his question. His comment was that the tax breaks are going to people who will just sock it away. As an economist, I'm not an economist. As an economist, at what point would you foresee that the tax breaks actually causing delivering relief to the people who need the money the most right now?
Representative Chair.
Oh, go ahead and answer the question.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Representative Fire. Far. Can we turn the microphone off?
Thank you.
I think what we have to look for is, you know, when they pass the tax break, these things, luckily, although it takes them a long time to decide when to do it, once it's decided on, it can happen rather quickly because it's worked through withholding tables. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can cut it, it's passed, the president signs it, and then it can happen fairly quickly. So I think what we would see then is we take a look at retail sales, any type of personal expenditures. If they start to go up, then that's going to be some indication that this is starting to work its way through. Mm-hmm. If, on the other hand, what we see is that, no, we don't see any changes there, but what we see is an increase in personal savings, then that is still not bad for the economy, per se, but the immediate effect is going to take longer.
And personal savings, it's not just piles of money in a vault someplace. It's investments in other aspects of the economy.
Yes, that's correct. Because it's such a hard thing to track, the way they do it in the statistics is it's a residual. They can explain everything else, and what cannot be explained, either through income or expenditures, must be savings. And that's a catch-all for all the
So, people. In fact, the sucking away is actually investing in other elements.
It can be.
Thank you.
Yes, but it's also possible it could be under the mattress.
Thank you.
The stock market. Once again, I dare to try to call this in any direction, either up or down. In our modeling, we actually have the stock market coming back gradually. But, of course, nothing even close to a plus 20% type growth we saw in the 90s. SARS, as we explained earlier, the downside is moderate, I think. So far, it's a tourism hit. To the extent that it hurts the economies of our trading partners, that can be somewhat of a spillover effect to our exports to those countries. But so far, indications are these countries, especially their manufacturing sector, their trading sectors, are still chugging along.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
To what extent does this seem to be a tourism hit for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, as far as we can tell, I don't think it's a large hit. It's very concentrated just in that type of travel agency, trip-type people that, you know, formulate groups that go over there. So it's really to that part. Now, the other aspect that is somewhat troubled with this is, you know, we firms here in Oregon have a lot of manufacturing facilities overseas. And it's very important for quality control and so on for them to have access to those facilities. To the extent that video conferencing and so on can take the place of that, there may not be much problems. And we've only heard a few cases where there is problems in that area.
Maybe we ought to move the jobs back here.
State and local government, this is, I think, a strong downside risk. State and local governments are essentially latecomers to the recession. You're budgeted over a two-year period, and trying to deal with it, there's various ways you can deal with it until you run out of options, and then some very tough decisions, either to cut spending or to raise taxes. Both are not beneficial at the time of a slow economy. But to balance budgets, there isn't a choice. So, and I say this, by the way, regardless of your view of state government, whether you think there's a lot of fat or it's really lean and only at the muscle now, you raise taxes, you cut spending, it's going to be a drag on the economy.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Corker.
But that seems to contradict what you said earlier about the fact that, at least in the non-residential construction, that it looks like public spending is probably the only thing that's going to be generated. And it seems to me that, for instance, if we finally took responsibility for a transportation package and started repairing these bridges and stuff, that would be a double benefit, and that would be a tax increase.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, you're absolutely right on these capital budgeted projects where you're able to borrow and be able to make those type of expenditures for that particular area. When we look at the broader picture of the whole budget and we're looking at education, you're looking at social services, you're looking at public safety, those areas are going to take, in my mind, a little bit higher, larger hits than the positive part on the capital projects.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Representative Hess.
Thanks. The one of the saddest things about all the cuts we're making is the loss of federal money coming into our economy. And I know that most all other states are in the same predicament. Is that what kind of effect is that having on the federal government having really less to pay out because they don't have to match all these states all over the country? Have you looked into that and enough to have any organized thought?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, not really. We recognize that, you know, in terms of that type of expenditure, that matching dollars will be lost, and as you've mentioned, just about every state is facing the same situation of having to give up those federal dollars because they have to cut. And on the federal side, I don't think that they see that as any big change one way or the other in their thinking. For us, yes, it's in a sense a little double hit in terms of type of expenditure that would happen in the specialty medical care area. And then finally, with high tech, I kind of covered that on the one chart. It's a very tough industry to forecast. It's a very volatile industry. They have lots of highs, ups, and downs. As we look out to the future, there is some positive signs, we said, in the near term. Farther out to the future, and we've mentioned this before, we have still offshore facilities increasing. And the troublesome part will be if these offshore facilities become research facilities, because that's our relative strength here in Oregon. So with that, I'm going to just give you a quick review of a comparison of our past forecasts. This is personal income, and you can see that here, 2003 and 2004, these are some rather large drops relative to our March forecast. And we enumerated some of the reasons for that. One was a revision in the numbers that we use were lowered. The other part is a lower inflation forecast because that generally, when inflation is higher, you generally have personal incomes going higher, and you get people, of course, going into higher tax brackets, which Michael will allude to. And then we have also a much softer recovery occurring in the economy. And so all those things have compounded to bring this personal income forecast down. Employment growth. Back in March, before the Employment Department had a better sense of the numbers and re-benchmarked, we were looking at less than a 1% drop for 2002. Now it's about a 1.3% drop in employment. So we received numbers that indicated that things were worse off than what the numbers were showing us even in March. So we take that into account, plus the recent information we've seen with employment in Oregon, plus the national forecast, which is really slowing down for the nation. All those have culminated into a much lower employment forecast also. Once again, we're not calling for a recession, but a much more subdued recovery period and one that takes longer. And with that in mind, I'd like to turn it over to Michael Kennedy for the implications of this economic forecast, what it means for the revenue forecast.
Good morning, Chairs Shetterly and Deckert, members of the House and Senate Revenue Committees. For the record, Michael Kennedy, economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. And I honestly wish I had better news this morning to give you. But as Tom has alluded to, some things have changed significantly, and that definitely has an impact on the revenue forecast. I think, as has probably made its way through the Capitol now, the forecast is revised downward. And that is predominantly in the personal income tax forecast. And I want to go through a couple of the factors. One question that obviously should be in everybody's mind is, wow, that's a big drop. What happened in 2 months that would change your expectations regarding the next 2 years so dramatically? And that's kind of what I would like to cover at the moment. Going back to the methodology discussions we've had recently, we forecast personal income tax revenues based on income and liability by year. And so that liability number really drives the collections we're going to expect to see. And one thing that's happened now is we've revised down our 2002 liability estimate significantly. Let's remember one of the issues here with the data we have and the way we model this is that the last year of data we have for liability is 2001. So 2002 is still a quote-unquote a forecast, even though it's already in the past. So roughly a year transpires between the end of the tax year and when we have good data on what income looked like and what tax liability looked like. But we do have decent information. We can do better than a forecast because we can't estimate it from the collections data. So going back to the March forecast, when we had estimated 2002 liability, and remember, that's really the base we're building on. You have that number as the base. Then basically your economic expectations drive how you think that liability is going to grow in the future through the model. So going to the March forecast, we had all of withholding for 2002. We had the majority of estimated payments. And so we have a pretty good idea of what people had paid in on that tax year. The real question then is what's going to happen in the tax season? What are final payments and refunds going to look like? What's that net refund number going to look like? And that would give you what liability will be. Well, that total, the error, basically is very constant from year to year. People basically have final payments and refunds in absolute dollars of about 26-27% of what they pay in during the year. It's a very nice, regular, insensitive number. And really the question there is, okay, how's that going to be split, though, between payments and refunds? Because that really drives the net number and has a dramatic impact on what your liability estimate is going to be. Well, and in fact, in recent history, there's been a very, very tight correlation between growth in liability and what that split between payments and refunds looks like. In high growth years, if liability grows fast, estimated payments in particular, which tend to be based on last year's liability, will lag behind, and you tend to get a much higher proportion of final payments than refunds. And you saw that throughout the late 90s. 2001 comes along, liability drops 8.6%, and people are horribly overpaid. And you get, then in 2002, you saw refunds being 70-plus percent, on a liability basis, 70-plus percent of that total, and final payments dwindled. The orange line here is actually just final payments and refunds in the year following the tax year. So it's not exactly the same, but we have better data on this longer history. So then going into the March forecast, the question is, okay, what is that split going to look like here in this March, April, and May? And what it turns out to have happened is that it completely went awry from that, you know, fairly decent correlation there. Whereas we were looking at liability being basically flat, and that would imply about a, you know, 38% final payments, 62% refunds. That basically gave us a liability number for O2 of about $3.86 billion. 2 months goes by and we see refunds, we see final payments, and in fact it's as bad as last year without the factors that drove last year to be so bad, which was the big liability drop. This year liability's flat. You had two factors that actually led us to believe it would be even a little better. The withholding tables were based on the $5,000 federal exclusion, but the delay of Measure 88 dropped it to $3,250. So there was reason to believe that people would be slightly underheld last year. So our March forecast assumed actually a 36-64 split. It was fairly conservative based upon all the information we had, and yet, in fact, that's not what turned out to be the case. Refunds were significantly higher than you would have been led to believe by this relationship and other factors. That basically drops the O2 liability estimate down to 3.74. So there's $120 million difference there. And that explains a good part of the revision in this forecast, because you take that 120 and you carry it forward, compounded by your growth rate, and it explains roughly $275 million of the 0305 drop in personal income tax forecast, purely on the basis of a revision in that base number. The other issue here then, as Tom has shown, is that our economic recovery profile is significantly dampened. And in fact, that is carried out here in the collections data as well. Looking at withholding, going into the March forecast, we'd had 3 months of negligible 1%, but at least growth year over year in withholding. Subsequently, 2 straight months of lower year over year growth. Some days I actually think someone's out to get me, because it's almost a little too regular. Looking at estimated payments as well, looking at the first 4 months of every single year, you can see obviously what caused the big refund issue in 2002, that big high level of estimated payments in the prior year. People were really overpaid. That drops. Now we're looking at basically flat estimated payments. The picture you're getting here, as opposed to what we had, say, with only 1 month done in 2003, is a much flatter picture. Now you're 4 months in with little sign of things improving, and it's really hard to believe then that 2003 is going to be that much better than 2002, which is somewhat different from definitely the December forecast before the year even starts, and even the March forecast with only a couple months of data. So,
Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Michael, would that lead us to, my assumption would be there would be more assurance of predictability with this forecast based on that, but, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's going to be a lot more predictability in that we've gotten the high-tech boom and bust, well, not quite out of the way, period, but you really don't see what drove that incredible aberration up and down. Occurring again. In particular, I attribute a lot of it to Y2K, and that really shouldn't happen again in our lifetimes. So I'm still looking at least not nearly the kind of swings and unpredictability that we've seen in the last decade.
Well, that is a certain statement, I guess, that Y2K will not happen again in our lifetime.
That's predictable.
That's predictable.
I'm taking that one to the bank.
I'm trying to say there's unpredictability.
You heard it here.
Yeah. And I'll leave now.
Unless we plan to be around in the year 10,000. But the point here being that definitely our impression of what we can expect in the next few years in terms of the economy recovering and the feeding into income tax revenues has definitely been dampened. And I'm going to talk even a little bit more about that. But let me review then what our income and liability forecast looks like. This is the output from the underlying model for the personal income tax forecast. And definitely want to draw your attention to the top line, wages. You can see what we have here is the historical 87 to 01, what I consider to be the baseline growth. During a fairly prosperous period, well, what you want to recognize is that the first year there is a fairly good year, and the last year is a fairly bad year. I consider that these historical growth rates to be fairly indicative of what our economic productivity was in Oregon during those years. And then you can compare that with what we're looking for the 01 to 09 period, your long-run economic assumptions. And so really the critical issue here is in wages, because they comprise almost three-quarters of our taxable income, our gross taxable income. And the change in the personal income profile definitely hit that forecast fairly hard. You can see a drop there from 5% average annual growth to 4.2%. Very, very much below what we were seeing in the last decade and a half. Some other issues there, the capital gains assumption has dropped somewhat, in that our advisors in particular indicate to us a very large volume of loss carryforwards still existing out there. We now do not have capital gains income, even coming back to the 01 level, which was $3 billion down from $6 in the prior year. We don't have it actually getting back up above that until 05 with all those losses out there. You really, in order to exhaust them, the stock market has to come back to make gains for there to have the losses offset against. And so you're really treading against water there for a few years. And when the stock market is expected to come back in 05 particularly strong, then that can overcome those losses that exist out there. Some other issues, actually the corporate profits forecast has gone up somewhat, and proprietorships and S-corps, which shows up in the Schedule E income, are expected to benefit somewhat from that because they tend to be ancillary firms that work with corporations and tend to benefit when corporations are doing well, or tend to go away entirely when corporations do poorly, as happened in this recession. But overall, as you can see, we've dropped the total income growth expectation here about half a percentage point. You'll notice, however, the liability expectation in terms of growth drops about 0.8 of a percentage point, drops by more than the income. And I'd like to address that for a second. This graph shows us the effective tax rate. It's just liability, tax liability divided by gross income. So you're basically your average percent of dollars that are delivered to the state in terms of tax revenue. And you'll see there in 2001 the incredible drop. It's actually commensurate with the 85 drop, which was the result of the phase-out of that temporary tax hike. So that was a reduction of a half a percentage point in marginal income tax rates. In 01, you had a very similar drop with no tax structure changes and purely indicative of basically high earners, high income earners, income dropping significantly. So a lot of 9% dollars, taxable dollars going away, reduced that overall rate. We wanted to look at that, however, because income dropped in 01 4.3%. Tax liability dropped 8.6%, and that responsiveness is very large. It's outside of the range of what you normally expect. And so in tandem with researchers at Revenue, we looked into that, and what we found is that basically all your adjustments from gross income to taxable income, your subtractions, deductions, exemptions, et cetera, and then your tax credits that get you to a final tax due number increase pretty much regardless of what happens in the economy. And that makes sort of sense. Your property tax values are pretty much just going to go up over time. A lot of your credits are going to be the result of just population growth, more people claiming them. And so what happens is you sort of get a double whammy on the downside. Your income drops, gross income drops, but then the distance between that and taxable income increases, and then even the distance between, you know, initial tax and actual tax due increases. And so that's what really drove that. The reason we wanted to look at this is because the question was, just looking at the initial numbers, are we going to see a bounce back in the other direction when the economy comes back? And the answer is actually looking at that, not really. Oh, one of the implications here, one of the bad implications is, yeah, personal income taxes are highly volatile, but it turns out they're more volatile in the downward direction than they are in the upward direction. When things soften out, everything's working in the same direction. When they're going up, those credits growing are actually a drag on overall bracket creep. It's basically the opposing force. And what that has an implication for this forecast is as you lower that income growth, you're getting closer to that point at which the income growth is just enough to offset those increases in credits, deductions, etc. So there's like a level of income growth at which the effective tax rate here would actually be flat, because the two would just basically level each other out. And so you do not have until out in 05 when that starts coming back, when wages grow enough to overcome that that sort of structural tendency there. So that's probably not a characteristic of a revenue system, you know, 90% of your income that you'd like to see more volatile in the downward direction, but it unfortunately is a fact. One slightly positive note here is that corporate profits appear to be showing signs of recovery, and you'd expect corporate profits to kind of lead the economy. One of the problems here is that, yes, net profits are showing a bit of strength here, but total payments are actually down, and the only thing that's offsetting them is that refunds are down by even more. The indication is there is the economy still weak, but they've burned through a lot of their losses that they were using to offset revenues in 01 and 02. And this has resulted in a slight revision upward in the corporate income tax side. So in terms of the current biennium, we present this in two steps because a lot has taken place since the March forecast. In terms of legislative actions, about $465 million was added to the general fund, appropriation bonds, plus some other transfers from trust funds. And so that took the balance from a negative $245 that existed as of the March forecast and turned it into a $180 million ending balance. Since then, we have revised almost entirely due to the weakness in withholding and then that excessive refunds issue. We've revised the personal income tax forecast down $68 million. Corporate profits or corporate income tax, as you can see, has gone up slightly. It's shown three straight months of beating the prior forecast. And then negligible change in other revenues, not including those one-time transfers. So you're looking at an ending balance now of about $120 million. And overall, then the forecast changes themselves netted out at negative 60. So the question, obviously, on everybody's mind is that enough? Is that sufficient to get us out of this biennium and move on to 0305? What you've got in terms of risks, 2 months of withholding, which tend to be fairly stable, but it's very large, so $10 million swing either way is not too much of a surprise. One estimated payment period cycle, June 15th, left. That's estimated about $130 million, but potential swing there, $10, $15 million either way. The tax filing season is winding down, but May still has sufficient refund activity. There's some leeway there. I personally think it's on the upside for us because of the accelerated processing that occurred, which was part of the reason why we saw refunds be so high in March. Barcode scanning of the returns has allowed them to process them much faster and ship out refunds much faster. And so we expect, in terms of historical relationships, we actually think there's a positive side there for us. Mm-hmm. But if I sum all that up, a little bit of allowance for corporate and for other, I basically get to, you know, for the most part, a $60 million potential swing in either direction, depending on what happens. So if you were to take that into account, say the worst case happens at $60 million, you're still looking at $60 million available there. I've heard rumors of expenditure problems that I'm not really familiar with, but at least in terms of revenues, we seem to be safe for this biennium. So moving on to the, I guess the meat of this presentation, the 0305 biennium. As a result of a lot of the issues that I've already discussed, we've revised the personal income tax forecast down by $665 million. The corporate income tax, as I said, is slightly higher, primarily because the corporate profits forecast is a little better. And all other revenues are fairly unchanged. So you're looking at a net forecast change of about $646.5 million. And a final revenue projection for the May forecast of 9.765, which is very low. Now, in terms of ranges around that, as we've been trying to do lately, talk more about, okay, but what's the likelihood of what we'll eventually see for this biennium and not just fixating on one number. You'll see there that, actually I'll skip forward a second and back up a second, how do we base these ranges? We've looked at history in terms of the forecast versus the closed session, or the closed session forecast versus actuals, which this forecast drives. It's the closed session forecast. And excluding the two outliers, because we do believe those were a one-time phenomenon, you get a standard deviation on that forecast error of about 4.1%. And statistically speaking, if that were to hold out into the future, you would say that 70% of the time you'd expect revenues to come in between 4.1% below and above the close of session forecast. Well, on the high side, the high 15% outside that, I don't think anybody's too worried about that. It's the low, so it's really the 15% probability that you could actually fall below that 4.1% figure. That leads us to then talk about, okay, in extreme cases, two standard deviations would basically get you 95% of all cases, and really that leaves only 2.5% below. So very little likelihood that you would ever fall below 8%, the current biennium experience notwithstanding. So what we recommend in terms, just statistically speaking, in terms of the variance with the forecast and what would seem to be prudent policy, if it's possible, is a two-tiered reserve policy. You figure that for the most part that 4% is going to cover you, say, 8 out of 10 biennium, 9 out of 10 between there. And so that leaving that as an ending balance would basically ensure that in all but the most trying times like this, you would be safe and you would end up biennium. And then in terms of long-term, to cover those more extensive variations from the forecast, another 4.1% as a rainy day reserve. But recognizing that at this point, this may all be moot, given the lack of resources to be able to even fund a budget, let alone set money aside.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I may be misunderstanding something here, but as I understood, the 4.1% is the your 70% confidence level, plus or minus. I guess I'm a bit confused. If that's the case, why would that take care of 8 or 9 of 10 biennia? Wouldn't it take care of only 7 of them? What have I missed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I'm basically ruling out the error on the high side, in that error on the high side doesn't pose a budget problem. Right, so you're covering 70, so it's only the bottom tail.
Thank you.
15%, 8, 85, 8 or 9. Thank you. So, anyway. So going back, if you use those two reserve levels, then you have a range on this forecast. The narrow range, the 4.1%, is basically 9.4 to 10.2 billion. When you extend that range to basically include all possible eventualities, but the most absurdly extreme, you're talking about closer to 9 to 10.6 billion. And recognizing that it's really the low number that concerns you the most at this point.
5%
Well, Mr. Chair, isn't it also true that the high number concerns us as well? I mean, one of the things that we got from the Treasurer a while back was that the concern about bond ratings has to do with the fact that we don't seem to be able to establish a reserve. And the need to establish a reserve only can, I mean, establishing a reserve can only happen when you actually make more than you had planned for, or you very carefully save some of what you had planned for. Isn't that correct?
Well, that gets to your second level of the reserve, isn't it? That extra 4.1%.
Mr. Chair,
I guess the point I'm making is that we are concerned about the upside as well as the downside.
And I will comment on that again when I get to forecast risk, because I do consider that definitely one of the risks here. Just in terms of the extended forecast, because I know even what you do in 0305 can also impact where you stand going into 0507, and you basically see a level shift resulting from these changes, 650 in the next biennium and roughly 700 million thereafter. So the whole forecast, by lowering those growth in each year, you basically get a continued effect there. You're never going to recover that, even if the economy were somehow do a lot better, you know, 2 years down the road than what we're forecasting. It's a lot to overcome to have such near-term growth be so moderated. In terms of percent changes biennium to biennium, this graph has definitely changed significantly since the last time. In particular, the addition of the $465 million actually makes this biennium look better than it did before, but recognizing that those one-time funds are skewing that somewhat. With that 465 addition there and little growth expected in the next biennium, you're basically looking at it being flat in terms of actual dollars once you adjust for the kicker and pension refunds. But recognize that in addition to the 465 that was just transferred in, there was about another 160 transferred in at the beginning of the biennium, tobacco trust, senior deferral. So there's about $625 million of one-time funds that are propping up this biennium. that obviously do not get reflected in 0305. And with that being so dampened and with the recovery expected to get in full force beginning in 04 but through 05, the 0507 finding still has some, well, more along the lines of historical growth in terms of general fund revenues, 16%. And then tailing off as the expansion then calms down to a normal economic growth rates. So in terms of risks, and what I'm really talking about here is more of the 8.2% range risks. I consider revenues to fluctuate just normally biennial to biennial to be within that 4.1% range. That's your normal variation. These are really things that could actually cause you to drop below that. And in particular, the high-tech industry, how that pans out in Oregon and whether those jobs are here or elsewhere when, in fact, business investment does pick up again is a serious issue for us. I mean, if somehow, you know, Intel notwithstanding, you know, preparing itself to have significant business here, if other firms were to move, that would definitely pose a risk for this forecast. Capital gains, I mean, I don't see now with the current capital gains forecast we have that there's much of a downside because we basically don't have any. But still, we've seen the market be exceedingly volatile and unpredictable, so the possibility is there. But it really would have to be more out in the outer years because obviously we don't have a whole lot of capital gains in the next few years forecasted. But really, I definitely see here when you talk about in particular what Representative Barnhart was talking about in terms of establishing a reserve policy, and, you know, now is almost impossible. But this forecast is very modest. We think it's reasonable given what we're seeing, but the upside there is significant. I mean, if you were to get, you know, a good business investment bounce back when it finally occurs, 2% is nothing. You're going to exceed the kicker threshold easily by middle of 2004. You know, if things were to work out well for our economy. And that's where you would be sitting there staring at money that would be perfect, ideal, to start establishing reserves for the future. And it's just something to consider, that if it went back as a rebate, you would basically lose an opportunity. As always, I like to end on a fairly positive note.
I always like how you leave us smiling.
You sure you're in the right profession?
Yes, sir. There's been some changes. In particular, a lottery just continues to do well. But as, I mean, maybe as everybody's aware, the Megabucks jackpot rolled up significantly high in recent months, and that really drove a lot of revenue. We don't ever project that kind of thing in the future because it's so unpredictable, but when it happens, basically it's just excess funds. It's basically a bonus. And so that fed into this forecast. Video poker just continues to grow year after year. It's hard to explain it. In its sustained level of growth, particularly since it continues to outstrip personal income, which at some point you suspect has to end. And we do have it moderating in our forecast, but we continue to be proven wrong week after week. But in net total, the revision here, and in fact, you can see the 16.4 in transfers and other revenues, they have administrative savings every fiscal year. The difference between what they have for administration and what they spend is distributed to us in July. Well, in fact, they sped that up to help with this biennium. So they transferred about $12 million in. Okay, so that was most of this revision. And in addition, then, basically the roll-up in the megabucks, that's an additional amount of transfer dollars. Right now, we're looking at an $11.3 million ending balance. Sounds like a lot of money, but given what you're currently wrestling with, isn't. In terms of the long-term forecast, after this biennium, we don't have a lot of the contingency fund transfers that we had this biennium, so you see a decrease. But that's basically money that they had available to for investment that they transferred a lot to help address budget issues this biennium, and it goes away next biennium. But otherwise, then we have growth entirely due to video poker growth, since all other games tend to tail off a little bit. You tend to see sort of an erosion of play. In terms of available resources, however, dedications have increased over the years, and in fact, the dedication for Education Stability Fund is now at 18% starting July 1. And so the dollars available for appropriation for other programs has dropped considerably from 95-97. And that is the revenue forecast.
I will add, just a moment, on our website here, the full publication that you're used to getting in front of you is available on our website as we speak. It was just posted. The printed document will be coming out in about a week. But we felt that rather than what we did in the past, which was send it to the printer and have everything done a week ahead, it would be better for us to get more information in coming right up to the date of the forecast.
All right. Senator Deckert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, for that slide right there, Senator Starr next to me, his coffee mug that has the Oregon Psychological Association. So if we could put the 800 number, and I'll give it to you on the website, I think that might be
perfect. The psychologist, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Comments?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hass.
I guess this is more of a comment, but this all seems like this strange recurring dream sequence that we keep having here. We're not yet in a recovery, we're not quite in a recession, and yet the bottom just keeps falling out here. And the one common denominator is that while we're in a tough economy, we're also in this, we have an income tax that we're too dependent upon, and that is contributing to these problems. And, you know, yet we continue to meet here and not address that situation. So I can throw that out as a comment. But my sense is we'll continue to have these recurring dreams until we at least make an attempt to address that situation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I guess the only other comment I'd make is the evidence of what might happen with the kicker is should push us even further to look at a rainy day fund and how we're going to appropriately deal with that, because that would, in fact, be the worst thing about waking up from bad dream is to, you know, to find out that the sheets are gone.
Mr. Chair,
Earnhardt.
I think apropos to that comment, the fact that the forecast that you're making includes these confidence levels, and you've described them in a statistically sound and useful way, I think gives us the tools that we need in order to deal with the policy question that Senator Corcoran raises, and I appreciate that very much.
Anything else? All right. Oh, did you have something?
No, just Mr. Chairman, I think we're basing the... I question the assumption that research and development won't follow manufacturing trends. That is, the manufacturing of high technology has moved offshore, that R&D will follow it. So I question the assumption that we can continue to believe that the high technology factor will play in positively, even though that's sort of what the mythology is. You know, we're all expecting high technology, even as they offshore their production facilities, to continue to do R&D in Oregon. And I seriously question whether or not that is a valid assumption long term.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, that is one of our risks that we recognize in this forecast, and it's a longer term type risk, you know, 4 or 5 years out. But the other interesting part that is also extremely unknown in a way is how technology itself is going to change. in a Joe Courtwright in the Business Journal made an interesting observation that, you know, Tektronix had around 12,000 employees, and now they're down to the 4,000, 5,000 range. But technology changed such that something else took its place. And as long as we've got that type of innovation type thinking going on here, entrepreneurship, that is going to help us into these times where the new technology comes, we'll be able to evolve again. But is that going to be, is this timing going to work or not? And your comments, definitely those are risks.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
With that, committee, and again, thanks to the Senate members for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you with us. We are adjourned.